Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of probation after death today. We're very glad you could join us. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And thank you all so much for joining us. And we will start with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from Miscellany, page 165, and the Blue Book, Divinity Course in General Collectania, page 275. Goodness never fails to receive its reward, for goodness makes life a blessing. As an active portion of one's stupendous whole, goodness identifies man with universal good. Thus may each member of this church rise above the oft-repeated inquiry, what am I? To the scientific response, I am able to impart truth, health, and happiness. And this is my rock of salvation and my reason for existing. O God, I ask for divine love to lead me, not to be tempted or yield to temptation in any way. I ask for wisdom and grace to know and do just what God would have me do. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you very much. All right, Karen, our watching point.
Watch number 95. Watch lest the phrase, quote, the fear of the Lord, end quote, offend you so much that you seek to interpret it by softening the meaning of the word fear. Our leader once declared, quote, the fear of the Lord is a wholesome idea. When the Lord or the spirit of understanding comes to you, it brings you fear, not of mortal mind, but of the effects of continuing to let it control you, since in belief it shuts you off from God. This is the beginning of wisdom, because it is the first step out of bondage. The student should be afraid to let his thought be overshadowed by mortal belief, not because he's afraid of a lie or what the lie claims to do, but of what it means to have a distorted sense of omnipotent good. The fear of the Lord might be defined as a fear to offend God by accepting a finite or sinful sense of man in the universe. God is perfect, and his creation is perfect. We should fear lest we accept or believe anything less than that high standard. If one understands the nature of omnipotence, he will fear to misuse or misconceive of it in the slightest degree. Mortal man is kept in line through fear of matter, suffering, punishment, medical law, etc. In science, we need a certain measure of fear to take the place of this, to keep us in line prior to the point where we gain such a love for God, good, that no other incentive is necessary.
Thank you. All right, comments?
Well, I was thinking recently how I can be adamant about the allness of God, but I also have to make sure, and the omnipotence of good, but I have to make sure that I am just as adamant that anything unlike God is unreal. I have to be just as adamant that whatever tries to claim or resist the omnipotence of good is unreal, doesn't exist, and so because it's no part of God's perfect man or the universe.
And also, and this to me is the point of this, is being damn sure you don't do it, and to have a healthy fear of disobeying God. It has to start somewhere. And if you don't have that, you don't have a fear of disobeying God, you can become a moral idiot. Mm-hmm. You have no sense, you have no conscience. And I have heard of Christian Scientists, and this is why I'm saying this. I know of someone who, and this is how they were taught, because error isn't unreal. They interpreted that they could do anything they wanted to.
Hmm.
Now, that is a gross misinterpretation, but believe me, it goes on. I've heard it more than one time. So I was raised, you know, by mainly in Christian mother, Bible Belt, Southern mother. It was a fairly lenient upbringing, but she taught me a fear of the Lord, and I was not to disobey the Ten Commandments or all hell would break loose. Now, that was a healthy fear of the Lord, because it's still with me to some degree. And I have, when I get tempted in certain ways, I know where that path is going to lead me, and a red flag goes up. Now, I don't see it all the time with people today. And even, for instance, you know, all this free love, and Mrs. Eddy talks about that. And we have the birth control. So it used to be, you know, you could be afraid of getting pregnant with someone you weren't really in love with or married to. But all that left, and you can just do all these things with seemingly no consequence. But they're huge consequences. The fear of the Lord, it's very healthy, and it should be taught to your children to some degree. Now, after I came into Christian Science, I had to get over, being so afraid of God, and go to the next part where you obey because you love him and because he's a God of love. And he never punishes you if you do whatever. He's not a God of wrath or punishment, but the error will punish itself. Mrs. Evans used to talk about it was similar if you were in a nice, safe, warm home, and for some reason you went out into a blizzard. And if you go out into that blizzard of mortal mind, you do not come under God's laws anymore. You're under the laws of the so-called laws, the bogus laws of mortal mind, and they're not nice, and anything can come your way. In other words, if you decide you're going to be dishonest and think you can get away with it, well, you go out of the Father's house, and pretty soon you're going to attract dishonest people to your door, and it won't be pleasant. And you'll wonder, if you don't know the rules of metaphysics, why is this happening to me? Why is all this stuff happening to me? Nothing ever just happens. So, a healthy fear of the Lord is a good thing. Flag should come up when it's leading you astray. All you have to do is think down the road where this is going to get me. And usually it's not good. That's why, you know, all these addictions. Because if people realize, you know, oh, it's just some simple thing, I'll just click onto this or click onto that, and no one will know, and it'll be fine. But the next thing, you can't control it anymore. Stay out of it. Don't get started in the first place, or you will become a moral idiot. And then you won't know right from wrong, and you will justify your actions, start lying to hide your actions. All kinds of things happen when you're not, when you don't have this healthy fear of the Lord. And again, this isn't the Lord punishing you. It would seem like it, but it's not. You've punished yourself by going out into the blizzard. So it's a very important point, and it's something we seem to be lacking in today's world. I mean, I don't know. Hopefully we're not, but when people think they can do anything they want to with no consequences. And in many churches, the fear of the Lord, I'm talking about Christian churches, it's no longer taught. Oh, don't, no fire and brimstone. Well, a little of that's not bad.
Yes, Spurgeon certainly didn't.
Yeah.
play around with that. He was very clear.
He was. But you do have to graduate to where it's love for God. You have to get past that. Otherwise, you can't maintain it just because you're afraid of everything, because that's where I was when I first came into science. And it took me a while to get out of that. And I didn't understand that it wasn't God punishing me, that I punished myself. I had to understand that very important point. And then I had to understand how much God loves me. He would never punish me. He only is all good for me. And why in the world would I want to disobey him or any of his commandments?
Especially when all the blessings and grace and beauty and all the good he gives.
Yeah.
I think of it like, you know, the straight and narrow way. Something I've observed in my time here is it's like you're feeling for where the edges of that straight and narrow way are. And then you go a little too far and you're like, oh, there it is. So it's very important to find that boundary.
Yes.
Especially when you start getting used to successive days of things going well and listening to God. And you don't want that to stop. So.
Yeah.
Yes, and you get to the point, I feel like, where even the smallest seeming thing that is unlike God that comes out of your mouth makes you feel sort of sickened in your stomach because it's offensive and you know it.
Thank you. Then you get where it is offensive to you, anything that's not of God. It has no allure at all because you know where it's going to lead you.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing.
And it's a good thing, yeah. Florence, did you want to say something?
I was thinking, you know, I think for me, the regular reminder of every good coming from God helps me to, reverence God to the point where, like you said before, it's respect and love for him so much that you do not want to offend him. I think that became a very healthy position, place to be, where it's more of a reverence, it's respect and esteem for what he is and what he does for man.
Thank you. And truly, it must be that, because we've seen people, you know, or churches who just run on fear, 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 and they rule by fear, and things get actually worse. So
and people start rebelling in that.
They rebel. They all kinds of things happen. So that's not it at all either. Yes, it is. It is the love of God. But you should have this, and if you love him, you will have a healthy respect of disobeying him. It says, when the Lord or the Spirit of understanding comes to you, it brings you fear not of mortal mind, but of the effects of continuing to let it control you, since in belief it shuts you off from God. One of the things I was taught, I don't know, it might have been in Sunday school or my mother or whatever, but when you drink, you no longer are in possession of your true thinking, are you?
Alcohol.
Yeah, drink alcohol. Yeah. So, in other words, you can't hear God's voice, maybe when you need to hear it most. So that was enough for me not to want to drink. There are just other things. And I remember, and I don't know what grade I was in, but we were shown a movie of people who were on drugs and how horrible it was. It was very, very graphic. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, but I think they showed me that movie too. It was very graphic.
That's enough to make me not want to drink or not want to do drugs at a very early age. But, you know, I don't know, maybe some people don't feel that way.
Well, go to the temptation, like you said, and then they can't get out of it.
Yeah. And they think they can just do it once or twice, or they'll stay in control, and they don't. A lot of these things, too, behind it is a control of hypnotism. It is. I read that, you know, the tobacco industry, I mean, what they use to get you hooked on tobacco, so it becomes addictive. We had someone here who came to church who was a chain smoker, and he was healed. And I remember he gave a testimony saying he'd gone to the doctors, and his lungs were black. And once that happens, I don't know how you correct it, except through Christian Science. So he was healed. He didn't smoke anymore. And the next time he went to the doctors, his lungs were normal. But my son heard that testimony, and that put the fear of God in him. So anyway, but going back to the hypnotism, the tobacco company does things to get you addicted. And then I read that they took over a lot of the food companies that do the processed food and get you addicted to that. Like all this sugary cereal, or get your children addicted. We as Christian Scientists should know this and be aware of it and have our armor on. And then recently, and I knew this too, we should know this as Christian Scientists, but someone who is a hypnotist says that in the news, they do things to hypnotize you into believing what they are saying. That's why I keep the TVs off. They do things, and he mentioned how they did it, some of the things. He knows how they do it because he's one that hypnotizes people. They have a certain way that they present things and put it into your mind, or sometimes it's just repeating it over and over. But that's why we have some of this bizarre stuff going on, and I will say in America, this unnatural hatred toward each other and other things. They are working on this. Who? They? The supposed enemy? But if you're just plunking yourself down in front of the TV set mindlessly, you are subject to being hypnotized to things that are false, to get you to do things that, or hate people, or do things that you shouldn't you wouldn't normally do. So beware. Never absent from your post. Never off guard. Never ill-humored. Never unready to work for God. Mary Baker Eddy. And again, we as Christian Scientists, I mean, most of this stuff I knew. I don't know how much it was taught, but instinctively you will know this if you study the textbook and prose works. But I do see a new breed of Christian Scientists, the mainstream ones, who seem very oblivious to a lot of this. They're not being taught how to handle animal magnetism. There was a great disservice done because they never were able to read the quote-unquote unauthorized literature. There's a great disservice that the Carpenter books did not get out that taught you the difference between divine goodness and human goodness. Human goodness seems good, but it isn't. And a lot of the Christian churches abide by the human goodness, but the human goodness lets all kinds of error grow rampant. So we need to know, and these are the latter days, we need to know, as we talked about last week, how to protect ourselves from these things. It's nothing to fear at all. It's something to have dominion over. I would like to say, too, that Anne from England, she sent to me that there's a quiet revival going on in England, that they call it, where more and more people are turning to God and turning to the Bible. And also, the Christmas season this year, someone presented the Passion of the Christ at Trafalgar Square, which was hugely attended. So there is a yearning to get back to God, because what else do we have to keep us happy and safe? There's nothing. Nothing. All right. I'm going to read the golden text.
First John, God hath given to us eternal life, and this life is in his Son.
All right, and Nancy, read what you sent in today.
Sure.
Thank you. Well, I looked up the word probation in Webster's 1828. Moral trial, the state of man in the present life, in which he has the opportunity of proving his character and being qualified for a happier state. And I looked up in prose work, the miscellaneous writings, what Mrs. Eddy said about probation after death. And she writes, man's probation after death is immortality. For good dies not, and evil is self-destructive. Therefore, evil must be mortal and self-destroyed. If man should not progress after death, but should remain in error, he would be inevitably self-annihilated. Those upon whom the second death hath no power are those who progress here and hereafter out of evil, their mortal element, and into good that is immortal, thus laying off the material beliefs that war against spirit and putting on the spiritual elements in divine science.
Thank you. The good explanation in many ways of this, what we know, probation and death in Christian Science, and really nothing else makes sense, does it? We go on and we continue to learn lessons until it's all destroyed. And I like that definition of probation, moral trial, the state of man in the present life in which he has the opportunity of proving his character and being qualified for a happier state. And what we study in prose works, the new birth, right? She says that it comes hourly, that every moment a chance to live a better life and to follow God. So thank you, Nancy. And then Karen, you have what you sent to me? You might be on mute. I don't hear you.
Did you want me to read the whole thing that I sent you?
Yes,
okay.
I do.
Mrs. Eddy had just finished teaching. She had chosen 70 students to teach an advanced class, and this was at the end of this 2 days. And this part was in the last, in the chapter, final examination in the second volume of the Doris Greckel book. Very gently, the teacher asked if any would translate passages from the Bible into the new tongue for her, and started the first young man who volunteered on Luke 24, verse 1. The second to volunteer was Mrs. Mims, and the teacher called her to the platform to sit by her side, saying she wanted all to see her. When she translated the second verse of Luke 24, quote, "And they found the stone rolled away from the sepulcher," end quote, Mrs. Mims started by saying, quote, "The stone was the concentrated human belief that life was limited, and they saw that life had rolled it away, and that man was immortal, that he was never born and never dies," end quote. But she did not stop there. She went on to say, "They saw what our beloved mother has, through science and health, enabled us to see. Through the book, we have seen all that they saw and more, and we owe it all to her, to this beloved one who is God's messenger today." After she had returned to her seat, the mother said that she had given a beautiful exegesis, but, quote, "I have one fault to find. It was not necessary to mention me," end quote. The class was deeply moved. One arose and with eyes full of tears said, quote, "Mother, how could we forget you?" End quote. Judge Hannah stood and in heart-rending tones said, "Mother, let me tell you this. Sometimes all the machinations of evil that are conceivable to the human mind seem to be hurled at us. And sometimes for days, the world seems black. Every argument that the ingenuity of evil can suggest whispers, trying to hide your mission. And the light returns only when we see you as you are, a revelator of this truth. The spontaneity of the occasion was beautiful to behold, as one after another arose and expressed the importance to him of acknowledging the mother's position. A strange, wonderful look of humility and self-effacement was on her face, along with tears of joy. Then she responded, "My dear children, if you had not seen it, I should have had to teach you this. I could not have avoided telling you that when my students become blinded to me as the one through whom truth has come in this age, they miss the path. I would have had to tell you."
Thank you. And that is what we often, you know, refer to as Mrs. Eddy acknowledging who she was, and as the woman in the apocalypse. Who else could it have been? And that, and in acknowledging that, much greater works can be done in Christian Science. Anyone want to comment on that? Thank you, Karen.
Well, it is just so important. I wish, actually, when I was branch church member, I wish I had had that, because I would stand up so many times, or in committee meetings or church, I'd stand up so many times and read things, you know, pointing to that. And I was just shut down. But I think if I had read that, I probably that would have been, because I just, when the first time I ever read that, I just almost brings tears to my eyes when I was reading it the other day. I just can't imagine the atmosphere at that moment when everybody just acknowledged her.
Yes.
As who she is, and the power that that brings to their demonstration and their success. And yeah, it's so important.
Yes, it is very, very important. So thank you. And this is why it helps to read her biographies and to know these things. Then we have the ammunition if we need it. But a lot of these things were not available to you in the mainstream. So.
Yeah, it's true.
At one point, the members of the church in Chicago wrote to her telling her that their healing work is not effective as it used to be. And what was her response to them?
If you love me more.
Yeah, you need to love me more.
Love me more. Mm-hmm.
And that's not human love. That's not idolization.
Who I am.
Yeah, that's what this article is all about. Recognizing who and what she is, and what her mission is, and what she has done for mankind.
And that's the argument they will say to shut you down. Oh, you're idolizing her. She didn't want you. They'll say these things to shut you down. You have to be wise. And also, you have to make sure you're not idolizing her. I mean, there are people that do or have. But if you're not and you're clear on all of this, you have the rebuttal. That's why it's important to know the history, as she herself said.
And the people who accuse you of idolizing her are in the human mind. It shows where their thinking is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she was very quick to detect if anybody was seeing her personally. She was very quick to change that, to correct that thought. And she knew it. If anybody looked at her in the wrong, you know, was putting her on a pedestal personally, she corrected that when she could.
Yeah.
As did students not to think of her. Don't think of me as me.
Yes. No. And, you know, the key to all of this was her humility, total humility about the whole thing. She knew it wasn't her. Mm-hmm. And anyone who does any kind of real science work knows it's not you. couldn't possibly be. It's God.
Well, you know, it's in the same way that you separate Jesus from the Christ.
Yes.
And call no man good.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to.
It's our appreciation for Christ Jesus that makes us receive the word, his words, you know, so importantly. So the same way we have to see Miriam Baker Eddy for who she really is in order for us to really accept and really revere her message so importantly.
Yes. Yeah, and as we've talked about, I think maybe there was even an article about it. When you read the scientific statement of being and you think just some nice lady conjured it up, it doesn't have the impact as when you know that she was God speaking to you, and she was the scribe under orders, the woman in the apocalypse who took the orders and who lived a life of total humility and total devotion to God and Christian Science, as Florence read in her morning prayer. What do we have to do in this life?
Yeah. To learn to bless and she would also say, oh, excuse me, Mary, sorry.
No, that's
well, she also would say that the only way she could have accomplished what she did was because she understood her place and that God was working through her, or she couldn't have withstood the resistance to what she was doing.
Absolutely.
And she would, yeah, that was. Yeah.
Well, and that's true, all of us here, to a much lesser degree. But if you realize your worth to this cause, you will not let error flip you over, or you will not let error tempt you. You will not let error take you off the straight and narrow. If you realize your worth to the cause, it's very important you understand this. All of you who have even bothered to call in or come or have this interest, that shows you're of worth and God is using you. And if you know it, you won't, as I said, you won't get taken off. You couldn't. And it is your love for God, as the Watching Point says. You love God, you're going to follow him and obey his commands and not listen to all this other stuff that would lure you away from it. Now I'm going to switch momentarily to Max Dunaway. Who can declare what loving hearts have done? All silent and alone they stand, fulfilling daily love's command, until they shall come forth with victory won. Like him who toiled along the rugged slope that led him to Golgotha's hill, to prove to men they could not kill the life that lived in love, in faith, in hope. Or she who in a lonely attic room communed with God for love of men, till he should move her waiting pen to write the book whose light should banish gloom. Oh, we cannot repay them for such good, but we can let our lives declare how richly did their own lives bear and do the works that prove our gratitude. And that's it, isn't it? That's all we can do, to do those works, to show our gratitude. Now, to change course again, this was something Carol sent me a while ago. It was from Mary Baker Eddy's Essays and Other Footprints. Sometimes we think about it, but we don't really know where it came from. It's on page 280, where Mrs. Eddy says, the methods of animal magnetism, especially its secret work, should be exposed. And that's what's happening, and that's what we must be willing to do, and not cowards. And then she says, this alone can protect the people from a future reign of terror, far surpassing any terrorism of the Dark Ages. One has nothing to fear from this evil if he is conscious of its presence, and on the basis of Christian Science, understands its impotence. It's very important, because many people do fear. You have to have the basis of Christian Science to understand it has no power. But if you just say these words and you don't know what it means and you just, oh, God is love, and there, oh, air is not real, like I talked about earlier, you're in danger. You've got to have the understanding. And this is why we do what we do, to get that understanding. So we are unmovable when air howls. Now, something else that someone else said, and this was interesting to me because I wondered about this. It's news article, but about, you know, how we always had religious exemptions. Okay, well, the states that no longer have it, California, New York, Connecticut, Maine, West Virginia, and Mississippi. Now, that was something I Googled, but and this article she sent me because she was concerned about it, but thank you. Hair flying around. Just this Monday, we shared with you the news that Massachusetts had proposed legislation to eliminate the religious exemption to require school vaccinations in the state. And today we are saddened to announce that Minnesota has joined the ever-growing list of states trying to usurp parental rights and the health freedom of its citizens. Now, this is being fought, but I will say, too, we learned so much through the pandemic. And also, I guess it was in the 80s or 90s when Christian Scientists were being sued because their children were dying because they... they weren't being healed through Christian Science. We must go forth as wise as serpents and harmless as doves. I've had people call me that all they want to do, they want to join. They ask me, do we have religious exemptions? Well, I don't. We're an independent church now. I don't know. I really don't know. I think we still have the forms in the clerk's office, and we used to Xerox them off. But she wanted just to join the church so she could get a religious exemption form. I said, absolutely not. For one thing, I didn't even know who she is. And as practitioners, at the time, Mrs. Evans, you know, counseled us that if a child doesn't get healed quickly in Christian Science, you let them go to the doctors. Where we cannot be stupid. So we go forward. And if you read all what she says about vaccinations and all of that, she doesn't say, she says, if it's the rule of the land, you go with it. And she has her reasons. I can't quote them all now, but I'm just saying, be wise about it. It is sad that we're reaching this point where we had it. When I was bringing my children up, we relied totally on Christian Science, and it healed in every instance. Yeah. And many cases that still goes on, and hallelujah for that. But you can't be a part-time Christian Scientist in order for these things to happen.
It's in miscellany. Rather than quarrel over vaccination, I recommend, if the law demands that an individual submit to this process, that he obey the law, and then appeal to the gospel to save him from bad physical results.
Thank you. And that's exactly what we do. And we have had wonderful Liberator magazines that take up these topics. All of you, if you don't have them in your computer files, you should have paper files or something. The one I mentioned last week about casting out demons, it's wonderful. And it has everything all collected in one magazine, not everything, but a lot of things. And we have such wonderful researchers in Cary in California and Louise in Missouri and many others who contribute. So that was in casting out demons. But we also, during the pandemic, we had a lot of them about no contagion or only good is contagious and other things that quote all these things. We're all there in one magazine. So they're very, very important. And Carol spends hours, as do others of you, in bringing it forth. And I love her criteria. She says, I do not accept it unless I love it. If I don't love it, it doesn't fly, right? And that's how we should feel about all that we do. We must love it. All right. Now, then, this goes a continuance of sort of last week's discussion, but I asked Jeremy a while ago, he composed for me a compilation of things, quotes on witchcraft, which is also really good. Very good. Is there a reason we don't have it on the website?
He just never told me to do it.
Okay, well, we'll put it on the website. And I might not, because I don't want to scare people. And this isn't about scaring you. This is about letting you rise to the occasion and realize that we must be smart on these issues. Anyway, in one of the articles, I think this was when Hartsook wrote a lot about this. And we knew Reginald Carey, as I've told you, and we knew what's in what I'm about to read is true because he told it to us too. He said, Reginald Carey sent out a series of explosive letters to the Christian Science field from 1975 to 1919, which detailed a pattern of corruption and immorality, which the directors of that era denied completely, and which their successors still deny these many years later. One day, Mr. Carey was met on a Boston street by a very prominent former member of the Christian Science Board of Directors who stated, "We don't understand why you are still alive. We have 100 practitioners working on you." Can you imagine admitting to that? Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Look at that malpractice.
But he told us this himself. And then he said, Mr. Carey's simple reply was, "I hate no man." Mm-hmm. So again, I'm not telling you this to make you fearful, but to get you into action. You can't ignore it, but at the same time, you can't be afraid of it or think it's real. You yourself cannot malpractice. And hating is malpractice. And when you do this, it's just what we started out with. You step out of the Father's house and you become a target. Now, all of this leads me to where I wanted to go. I only have a few more minutes to talk, but Carrie and what she sent me, a lot of it was about love. And it's certainly brought out in this week's lesson. Certainly in our responsive reading, we have John. And then to the first quote in Signs and Health, to reach the heaven, the harmony of being, we must understand the divine principle of being. God is love. Now, in order to progress along the ways we should, we must love. And we know how John, the disciple, went around in his latter years telling everyone that love, we should love one another. He that loveth not his brother abideth in death. Whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. So, just going to share a little bit from these articles that Carrie sent. One is The Brother's Keeper by Mary Brookins. This was from a 1905 issue of the Christian Science Journal, which is when Mrs. Eddy was here. The gentle John, who was called a disciple of love, proclaimed in no uncertain manner that he that loveth his brother abideth in death. Whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer, and ye know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. Because life is love, every thought of hatred that in belief deprives of love is the death-dealing weapon that deprives us of life. So here we are, you know, you're depriving yourself of life every time you hate or resent or any of the other words for that. And I would say jealousy, covetousness, it all goes along. There is an old pagan fable that tells of a certain criminal who, in punishment for his misdeeds, was doomed to see all people as grim and ghastly skeletons. The beauty and grace of their embodiment have been made invisible to his sight. Thus, mortal mind, in paying the penalty of the sin of material sense, is blinded to the true grace and beauty of spiritual being and sees only the bony skeleton of its own misconception of man. And here we go. Jesus beheld in science the perfect man, right? But are we doomed to see bony skeletons everywhere? Or are we as Christian Scientists going to see the true man and understand that truth? And so it goes on that we have to desist from calling our fellow brothers untruthful and unrighteous, weak and wicked. And the more we do that, the more his truthfulness, strength, and goodness will become apparent. The less we picture and repeat the elusive phases of evil, the more will truth and love be made manifest by all. So here we have that responsibility to get out of that fable. And then two, another one, Life, Love the Only Life. This is from a 1900 issue of the journal. Love is commanded because it is the fact of existence. Now this one, if we cherish hate, resentment, or even ill will towards anyone, we cannot get our petition for health, harmony, life answered. We must first correct the mistake. First be reconciled to thy brother and then come and offer thy gift. We cannot break the changeless law of love and obtain harmony any more than we can break the law of mathematics and obtain a correct answer. All our petitions and prayers are unveiling till our error is corrected and destroyed. Do you understand that? Because, I mean, Barnes and I talk about it sometimes, because people will come, they're not willing to give up their cherished hatred or whatever, and yet they want healed of their problems, and you can't do it. You got to first cleanse and purify yourself, and that takes work, and that's where ProsWorks comes in to help you with all those wonderful pond and purpose, yes, the new birth, other things. And none of us, believe me, none of us are perfect. We're all working out our own salvation.
And because the hate is sickness, right?
What's that?
I said the hatred is the sickness.
Yes, it is. It is.
So and if you're not willing to give that up, then you're not giving up your sickness.
Yes.
And they both be willing to give up everything for Christ.
That's yes. And no impossible task do I demand, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then one other. Now, this was a commentary that really, a Christian commentary about the story of Peter and John healing the lame man. And this person said he always was so impressed with this, by Peter's words when he said, "Such as I have, give I thee." I said, well, what did he have? and then he goes to Ephesians 3. Now to him who is able to do exceeding abundantly beyond all that we ask or think, according to the power that works within us, to him be the glory of the church and in Christ Jesus to all generations, forever and ever. Amen. Then he goes and he looks up that word, exceeding abundantly beyond. Well, folks, that means a whole lot, a whole lot. So the point is that that power of God is a whole lot of power, and it's in you. And that's what Peter had that healed the lame man. And we've all got it if we reverence it and cultivate it and use it to his purpose. We can't use it for our own purpose, but only for his purpose. And you know, who else brings that out a lot is Carpenter, a huge amount of power of God. Mrs. Eddy calls it, what does she say, Titanic?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A lot. We probably just scratched the surface. So remember that. And then in this story, he says how this man was asked to go to heal someone who's in a coma. I said, oh, wow. So he went to that person every day and sat by the bedside for a whole year. And he would sit by the bedside and pray for an hour. And at the end of the year, the woman sat up. Now, he attributes it to this. He said it took a while, but He kept doing it. He never gave up. And it was that power upon power upon power upon power. So that's what we do. Don't give up if you don't see it right away. Keep going. Applying that huge amount of power of God. Not of us, of God. Okay. Gary has something to end on. Hopefully we have time.
This is article entitled The Resurrection and the Life from the 1893 issue of the journal.
Which was the first one ever issued.
And it doesn't say who the author is.
Which means it might have been Mrs. Eddy.
The tomb in which Lazarus was buried symbolizes the tomb of mortal sense, the darkness and blindness of mortal man. The grave clothes in which he was wrapped further symbolize the bounden and helpless condition of mortals in their state of blindness. It required the understanding of life possessed by Jesus to resurrect the dead Lazarus, to bring him forth from the tomb, and demonstrate to him and those about him the fact that he was not dead. The world calls this a miracle. A miracle it indeed is to human sense. A miracle it will remain to all who continue to look for life and intelligence in matter. To the wisest of Earth's material philosophers, it is a profound miracle today. So incomprehensible is it to their philosophy that they are prone to discredit the big biblical narrative and to denounce it and all similar narrations as the fine fiction of the biblical writers. So long as they remain in the dark tomb of human speculation and look to the material evidences of life as being the real evidences, so long will they continue to doubt, dispute, deny. To those who have been partially awakened to the fact of God as all life and all activity, the resurrection of Lazarus becomes divinely natural. It becomes an object lesson by which they see that life is, they see what life is by which they see that death is false, and that the resurrection is the coming out from this tomb of human sin and blindness into an understanding of man's oneness with God. To indulge the hope that by remaining at ease in material conditions and courting the vanities of this life, we are attaining to the standard of happiness is a terrible delusion. The pleasures of this world of mortal sense are false, delusive, misleading. Their inevitable end is the tomb of misery and despair. The awakening from the death of sin is, to mortal sense, the acme of suffering. Fortunately, it is the suffering of the resurrection. The finale of it is bliss, joy, peace, that peace which passeth all understanding. In surrendering to the Christ demands, we are exchanging pebbles for pearls, the dross of the flesh for the pure gold of the spirit. Is it not a glorious exchange? On material planes, would we hesitate to make such exchange? How vastly better, richer, grander is the value we receive at the hands of God than at the hands of men? Can we not afford to deal in the divine mart and seek only the heavenly merchandise? The suffering, after all, is but the seeming of the senses. In reality, its reality is the stepping forth from the charnel house of the flesh.
Charnel.
The charnel house of the flesh. Into the glorious liberty of the sons of God. This is the resurrection and the life to which the Master referred when he spoke to the believing Martha. We need but step out from the dark tomb of material sense into the bright and shining atmosphere of life, truth, and love to find our resurrection. Jesus' command is as much for us today as it was for the entombed Lazarus. And we too, if we will, may now hear the welcome words, loose him and let him go. For I am the resurrection and the life. End quote.
Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.